Part 2.
God, Nancy, Regina and Scott.
What do you think of that?
I think that's totally gay.
Type in monkey dick in the Yahoo podcast search, and we come up number one. That's right.
Here's what I'm going to say in retort, in rebuttal.
Yeah, your ass called, and he says, stop sticking cocks in it.
Sword. Sword fight.
Sword.
Yeah, I had like a fluid-filled pus ball.
Am I keeping you up? Sorry.
No, I was...
Shut up.
Well, and I couldn't agree with more with Dr.
Tooth Fairy John, Santa Claus, Easter Bunny.
Do you even pay attention to your own crap?
I listen to my own crap.
Don't listen.
I do listen.
You're not. You just yap, and you don't even listen to it.
I do.
I listen.
So if you're ever looking for our podcast, type in Monkey Dick.
You're listening to Total Talk Nonsense with John and Scott.
All right, AKC's Total Talk Nonsense with John and Scott. I'm John.
And I'm Scott.
And this is episode 52, part 3.
Two, you doofus. Wait a minute. You fucked up. You said episode 52.
Oh,
it's
sorry.
Episode 53. So when you fucked up, that made me fuck up, you fuck up.
What is it? Episode what?
53, part 53. 53.
Part
53, part 2.
Right.
And next week, we will not have that intro anymore. We'll have another intro where we will put in part 1, part 2, and part 3. This week, we had the Crybaby Emo Kids put that together for us.
Dear diary, mood, apathetic. My life is spiraling downward. I couldn't get enough money to go to the Blood Red Romance and Suffocate Me Dry concert. It sucks because they play some of my favorite songs, like Stab My Heart Because I Love You, and Rip Apart My Skull, and of course, Stabby Rip Stab Stab. And it doesn't help that I couldn't get my hair to that flippy thing either, like that guy from that band can do. Some days, you know.
I'm an emo kid, nonconforming as can be. You'd be nonconforming too if you look just like me. I have paint on my nails and makeup on my face. I'm almost emo enough to start shaving my legs, because I feel real deep. When I'm dressing in drag, I call it freedom of expression. Most just call me a fag, cause our dudes look like chicks, and our chicks look like dykes, cause emo is one step below transvestite. Stop my breathing and slit my throat. I must be emo, I don't jump around when I go to shows.
Sing along, John.
I must be emo. I'm dark and sensitive with low self-esteem. The way I dress makes every day feel like Halloween. I have no real problems, but I like to make believe. I stole my sister's mascara, now I'm grounded for a week. Sulking and writing poetry are my hobbies. I can't get through a Hawthorne Heights album without sobbing. Girls keep breaking up with me. It's never any fun. They say they already have a pussy. They don't need another one. Stop my breathing and slit my throat. I must be emo. I don't jump around when I go to shows.
I must be emo.
Dye my hair and polish on my
toes. How'd you know that was the lyrics?
I must be emo. I play guitar and write suicide notes. I must be emo.
My life is just
like this, you know. It's so dark, and it's suffocating me. Grabbing a hold of me and tightening its grip. Tighter than a pair of my little sister's jeans. It looks great on me.
When I get depressed, I cut my wrists in every direction. Hearing songs about getting dumped give me an erection. I write in a live journal and wear thick-rimmed glasses. I tell my friends I bleed black and cry during classes. I'm just a bad, cheap imitation of goth. You can meet me Catcher in the Rye and watch me jack off. I wear skin-tight clothes while hating my life. If I said I like girls, I'd only be half right. I look like I'm dead and just like a homo. I must be emo. Screw Xbox, I play old-school Nintendo.
I must be emo.
I like to whine and hit my parentals.
I must be emo.
Me and my friends all look like clones.
I must be emo.
Oops, emo.
My parents don't get me, you know. They think I'm gay just because they saw me kiss a guy. Well, a couple guys. But I mean, it's just, you know, can't two or four dudes make out with each other without being gay? I mean, chicks think that kind of thing anyways. I don't know, diary. Sometimes I think you're the only one that gets me. You're my best friend.
And that reminds me, John.
I feel like tacos.
Punky has surpassed Crybaby Emo Kids to take the number two spot on Podcast Alley.
Wow.
I might be one of the biggest cocks on the planet.
Unbelievable.
Punky, as you know, is one of our favorite podcasts. And that reminds me, I owe Pauly B an apology. And we talked about this in part one, that I'm a total asshole now.
Fuck Pauly B!
But I said fuck Pauly B for no reason. No reason whatsoever. I said fuck Pauly B, and I didn't mean that. I take that back. I didn't have internet, so I couldn't take it out in post.
Internet.
And it went out on the internet, so that's it's something that I lost a lot of sleep over, John.
You're getting soft, dude.
The great Pauly B.
You're getting soft.
Aren't I? Yeah. I'm turning into a big angry pussy is what I'm doing, John.
An angry pink taco.
Maybe a crybaby emo kid. Maybe I'm de-evolving.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Pendulette is a big giant crybaby emo kid.
You think so?
Yeah.
Why?
Because he paints his one nail black or red or whatever it is.
Does he?
Yeah. His pinky.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
We'll have to Gmail him. Yeah. And ask him why.
You just go on his website. It's part of the FAQ.
Oh, so why does he?
Because he thinks it's cool.
Oh, all right.
So people ask him about it.
Okay. That's why I walk around with my dick hanging out. Because I think it's cool.
And people ask about it.
I want people to ask me about it, yeah.
Hey, dude, why do you hang?
Well, actually, no. They just tell me my zipper's open. Oh. And then I say, well, my dick's hanging out. I say, oh, I really didn't, I couldn't see that. Well, I have a couple of science stories, Sean. First science story. Not everyone says or okay?
I'm giving you some science
when
muse.
When they hesitate while speaking. It depends upon the language.
Really?
For example, speakers of Mandarin Chinese often say "zegzha," which roughly translates as this.
Zegzha.
In English, we say and ah, and other vocalizations for reasons that linguists are not entirely sure about. And ah contain what linguists call neutral vowel sounds, making them among the easiest sounds to make. It may be that they can be said without a great deal of thought, too. So that may be part of the answer. And ah are what linguists call fillers, John. Fillers help conversations continue smoothly.
Eep, ock, a lork, op.
And the one thing that really bugs me about fillers is somehow the word like has become a filler. And it drives me insane. And the other thing, the other one is... you don't do that.
Yeah.
Because I would tell you you did it. I mean, you do it every once in a while, but you don't do it consistently. Incessantly. which drives me batty. When people have to say like four times in every goddamn sentence, insane.
You know what drives me crazy? Is when people say, Jesus Christ!
Why does that drive you crazy? Because they're taking the Lord's name in vain,
John. That's right.
That is blasphemous.
Blasphemous.
Just like that Da Vinci Code.
Blasphemy.
Although we may not consciously realize it, John, in a two-person conversation, people speak by taking turns. Like we do. When someone thinks it's their turn to talk, they do. Otherwise, they listen. A two-person conversation becomes like a tennis match, John. Inevitably, there are short periods of silence as people pause to let the other person take over the speaking. But sometimes a speaker doesn't want to give up their turn and instead wants a little extra time to think about what they're going to say.
Jesus Christ!
They use a filler to signal this, John. So, for instance, if I'm in the middle of a thought... I'll put the in there so that you won't start talking. You see how that works?
Well, how about people that say, or what?
Or what?
Hey, man, are you going over there or what?
Oh, I never noticed that.
dude, man, are you going over to so-and-so's house or what?
But you can only do that
is
after
that your
a question.
Car or what?
I got a worse one. Here's the worst one.
What?
The people who say okay. Okay, so I'm going to drive over to your house, okay? And
okay.
When I get to your house, okay, you come out your front door, okay? And it's like...
Oh, I like! It's like...
It's like, you know, it's like the other filler. The like filler.
Or,
you know what I mean, John?
Yeah.
You know?
Or,
it drives me insane.
Yeah. Right.
So, when a listener hears the filler, they continue listening rather than start talking.
Right.
And uh-um-er are examples of phonemes. And in linguistics, phonemes, phonemes are the smallest meaningless speech sounds humans make.
Phonemes.
You know what the W's phonemes is? The smallest meaningful speech sounds humans make are called morphemes. Morphemes. Everything we humans say
says
is either meaningless or meaningful. A lot of people never learn the difference.
That narrows it down.
Well, it does. You tune into AKC Total Talk Nonsense, you get meaningful, John.
Meaningful.
You tune into Red Bar Radio, you get
meaningless.
That's
Jesus Christ!
And the last science story tonight, John.
Yeah.
Teens who take virginity pledges can't be trusted, according to analysis of follow-up surveys. Findings! There's a lot of findings. Keep up with me, John, okay?
All right.
Number one, 52% of pledgers denied a year later that they'd pledged. Number two, among pledgers who had later admitted to having sex the year after they pledged, 73% denied that they've pledged. Three, among pledgers who conceded in the first survey that they had sex, nearly one in three claimed a year later that they never had sex. Four, pledgers are four times as likely as non-pledgers to recant previous admissions that they'd had sex. Here's the researchers' conclusions, John. Teens lie. Boy, that's a stretch, isn't it? Two, pledgers
can
lie even more.
That?
Three, born-again pledgers, those who pledge after sex, lie the most. And four, pledges fail.
Wow.
We do not have an idea what works or what the truth is because all of this revisionism makes the data worthless. And here's the deal, John. The reason that you and I are sitting here talking today is because our parents and their parents and their parents and go on and on back a billion years fucked each other. That's the only reason we're here. And the urge to fuck each other is at the most powerful time in your teens.
Right.
And you're not going to get around it by making a stupid-ass pledge or any other thing. Here's what we need to do, John. Sex education and strap the condoms on the boys.
The condoms on the boys.
That's all you got to do. That's it.
Well, you know, that even the Pope is talking about he thinks that'll be better. Start putting the condoms on the boys.
The Pope the Benedict is saying that.
He talks just like the last Pope.
Just even, like the last one.
Yeah, even though he's a German. He's a Pope Benedict Arnold. How come when I do the Pope, I sound like a Lawrence Welk?
Let's get into a couple of religious stories. We get to our Da Vinci Code, John. Da Vinci Code, because you and I had a date, John. Last night, we went and saw the Da Vinci Code.
That's when I heard the Jesus Christ.
That was hot.
The Jesus Christ part? Or?
Get this, John.
I'm getting it.
Preacher, God told him about storms and a tsunami.
Really?
Get this, Robertson. That's Pat Robertson to you and me.
That moron.
Says warning was for this year, John, that a tsunami might hit the Northwest. In another, in a series of notable pronouncements, religious broadcaster Pat Robertson says God told him storms and possibly a tsunami will hit American coastline this year.
Thomas Aquinas.
And here's how God talked to him, John. This is the interesting part.
Cell phone?
If I heard the Lord right about 2006, the coast of America will be lashed by storms. There well may be something as bad as a tsunami in the Pacific Northwest.
Pardon me?
Okay, now, if I heard the Lord right, does, has Pat Robertson in the past heard the Lord wrong? Has he been wrong about something that he hasn't come forward
about?
Yeah,
right.
And that's the truth.
Like, did he ever say, God hates fags? That's what I heard. And then the Lord came back and told him,
no,
well, I really don't hate fags.
I didn't say that.
I didn't say that. You
that's
heard
my
me
big
wrong.
Fat fucking sausage!
If I heard the Lord right. But think about that for a moment, John. If the Lord talked to you, don't you think he'd get it right? Unless you were, like, doing shrooms or
well,
something?
Well, the Lord might get it. He'd get it right, but I might mishear him.
No, there would be no mishearing. He's the Lord, John. The supreme being, the creator
bring.
Of the universe.
The supreme being.
Yeah, the supreme being. He wouldn't make sure that you knew what he said, wouldn't he?
You knew. Yeah, I guess.
If the Lord's going to communicate with you, you're going to better damn well know what he's going to say.
Right.
You're not going to say, what was that, Lord? I didn't get that last part. That's not going to happen. Like Way of the Bob's thing. We were trying to figure that out. So if that think, was God, we wouldn't have to try to figure it out.
You think
we would
the
know.
Lord goes like this? Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me now? I don't think the Lord does that. So that's why, if you, in here's the deal.
Because he doesn't exist.
If you, he may or may not, but if, let's hypothetically say that he does. And let's hypothetically say that the fairy tale known as Christianity is true. You still have a God that may or may not give you the right message because he's not going to give you the power to hear him correctly. How stupid is that?
I think you're stressing way too much.
Aren't I?
You're an angry atheist, aren't you?
A deist. I'm an angry deist.
An angry deist.
Maybe I'll be an atheist.
So you believe there is a God?
Supreme being. So I definitely believe in a supreme being.
Oh, fuck
that being
that.
My wife. So that would be my deist. It. As far as a God, as far as Allah,
Goddess.
Buddha, Jehovah. Whatever? No, I don't buy any of that.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, God's son?
Nah.
No. Nuh-uh.
No.
No.
Yet.
Yet.
Nada.
But I hold out the possibility that, yes, there is a... here's the difference, though. Supreme being, we think of this in our culture.
Bring.
That somebody that comes down and burns bushes and talks to us or talks in a deep voice like this, and we're created in his
Hello.
Image. But that supreme being may be an alien that created Hello. Us in a beaker,
right.
Petri dish, John. That could
right.
be the supreme being. Who knows?
The grand deceiver.
I don't know. All right, then.
The grand deceiver.
One other miscellaneous story.
Miscellaneous.
Expectant moms fear giving birth to Antichrist on 6606.
Just call it Damien.
For one group of expectant mothers, their due date holds an extra dimension of dread. The prospect of giving birth on June 6th, 2006 has prompted talk of spawning devil children on Armageddon Day. And you know why that
this
is
so stupid?
This is such a problem, John? Because even if you're over in England where you got that fucked up date system, it's still 666.
But what if it's 616?
That's why it's universal. Universally an issue.
616.
666.
Yeah, but still, there's the jury's still out on what those numbers are.
Well, what?
616.
They're not out. No. The jury's in, John.
Jury's not in.
The jury is in. I'm the jury.
No.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what 666 is, okay?
You goddamn.
Can I tell you what it's
the Fibonacci code.
The 666? It's a fairy tale, John. Okay? That's what it is.
Okay.
It's made up. It's like the Easter Bunny.
I understand that.
Okay. So what's the point? What's the problem?
I'm just telling you that there's other scholars that say it's really 616.
Scholars, really? Scholars. Yeah.
Theologians.
People with educations in theology say it's 616.
Well,
and you got other crackpots saying it's 666.
Somebody wrote all that shit. It wasn't just the New Testament and the Old Testament weren't just written like yesterday.
The key word there is shit, John. Somebody wrote that shit.
Right.
Obviously somebody wrote that. There was just this guy on Oprah Winfrey. Who wrote something that they thought was the truth. And then they found out it wasn't the truth.
But he wasn't inspired by God.
But what if he was?
He wasn't. He didn't say he was.
But hypothetically, hey man, what if he was?
This is God's word.
Would it be the truth then?
I don't know.
Pat Robertson, God talks to him.
You're right.
So is that the truth?
He's a radio beacon for the Lord.
Right. All I'm saying is, I don't care that somebody wrote it down. So what? That doesn't mean shit. I write stuff down.
I'm just saying that if somebody wrote it down and they wrote 616, all these years, people have been misinterpreting it as 666. Whether it's true or not, doesn't matter.
It's got to be 666 because that was in The Omen, John. It wasn't 616.
And Hollywood wouldn't lie.
Right. They vet their information.
Especially.
And you could see that in The Da Vinci Code, which we saw. And that's a perfect segue,
especially
John.
Especially Oliver Stone.
So I was in Skokie. I had to have John run over to my in-laws to pick up medicine for my dog because he's getting over an illness.
Yeah.
So he had to come over here, not over here, but over there, which is like 11 houses down, pick up some medicine and then drive to Skokie to pick me up.
Skokie.
Out on a street corner.
Yeah, which I passed.
And then we went to the Da Vinci Code at the 10 o'clock show, John.
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty packed.
Yeah, but people were still coming in 20 minutes after the show started. And that really
fucking
irritates me.
Well, you know who those people are. Those people are, it's a multi-cinema thing, right? So they go see something else that ends at 10:20.
Oh, yeah.
And then they stroll into the Da Vinci Code.
Let's go see that one. Fuckers.
Right.
Septics. Yeah, that's bullshit.
But we had some choice seats.
Yeah. And then two people had to sit right fucking next to me.
Now.
And I thought they were going to blow us up.
What do you mean?
Well, the dude kept like pulling his cell phone out and the chick and the dude was leaning way forward and then the chick would lean way forward. Like they were nervous about something. I'm thinking, okay, they strapped on a vest of dynamite and C4 and they're going to blow all us up to kingdom come. The guy's going to stand up and he's going to say something, call us a bunch of heathens and then
hit
the button on the cell phone and we're done for. And I thought, all right, well, that's cool. I'm right next to them, so it's not going to hurt a whole lot.
What if that was their plan, but they couldn't get their cell service to work, John?
Can you hear me now?
And we escaped God's wrath
right
by his own divinity.
Or better yet, they just chickened out.
Yeah. Maybe the Lord spoke to them.
You know what?
Maybe they didn't hear the Lord right.
Maybe I didn't hear the Lord right this time. Let's not do it.
All right, John, so your impressions of the film. Now, we both read the book, right?
Yeah.
Now, I can't remember reading the book. I do remember reading the book. I can't remember finishing the book. And at a point in the movie, I said, oh, yeah, that's right. This is where I checked out. So we could talk about it later. But what were your thoughts of the book, specifically the book?
Well, first off, Scott, the Da Vinci Code hit $77 million.
$77 million in a weekend?
Yeah.
All right, now I'm going to compare that with Mission Impossible 3 with the great Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Which hit $48 million.
Yeah.
But that's just U.S.
$77 million, Da Vinci Code.
Was that just U.S.?
Yeah.
Okay.
Second place was Over the Hedge at $37 million. Mission Impossible 3 at $11 million. And
Oh, wow.
The Poseidon Adventure at $9.2 million.
Wow. If next week the Poseidon Adventure is ahead of Mission Impossible 3, Tom Cruise's cruise is over. What did I just say?
Tom Cruise's cruise is over.
Right.
Moviegoers gave their blessing to the Da Vinci Code over the weekend, spending an estimated $77 million to see the Tom Hanks religious thriller. Although the film didn't set a domestic box office record, it was the largest weekend opening of the year so far and became the second largest worldwide release after Star Wars Episode III. It garnered some $224 million worldwide, according to Sony Pictures. The film also was the best domestic opening for both Hanks and director Ron Howard.
Ron Howard.
There you have it.
Now, your thoughts on the movie?
For me, I don't like seeing movies after I read the book.
So you didn't like it?
I did, but it just was like, because there's a surprise ending, although, you know it's coming. But, and you know it's leading up to it. But for most people, I think it's kind of romantic enough that the ending would really be kind of cool if you didn't know what it was going to be. But I kind of thought the movie dragged on a bit, not leaving a lot to the imagination, but I think you have to tell all those details for anybody to get it. And that's why, to me, his book was such a great page turner, because they would quickly go over a detail and then they would do this whole run through. Like, have you ever read a Stephen King novel?
Yes.
I cannot stand Stephen King.
Okay.
Because of the detail he puts in his books. Just don't leave enough to the imagination. I mean, the fibers on the clothes were like woolen and itchy to the skin and da-da-da.
Yeah, but that means something totally different to you than it does to me.
I know. But it's what do you call it? I don't know. Objective. What do you call it?
You didn't want me to start speaking,
subjective,
did you, John?
Subjective.
Because you said, one will suffice.
But yeah, I don't like all that fucking shit. Just get to the point, you know? And I think the book did that. But then every time you turn to the next chapter, there's another puzzle. There's another puzzle. I mean, you're right about that. But to me, that was kind of neat. Because I'm really interested in the religious history and shit like that.
Right.
So the movie for me was, you know, it was good. I was totally entertained by it. Cruise. Tom Hanks is great in it. The French chick is just kind of arm candy. I always liked that French dude. What was his name?
Jean Reno.
I like him.
Because he was in The Professional with a 12-year-old Padma.
Yeah.
Nice.
And who's the English dude that played Lee Tabing? What the hell's his name?
Ian somebody.
Ian.
He's an out-of-the-closet homosexual,
McGregor.
John.
Ian, no, not Ewan. McGregor.
Ian somebody. But I think he hit it on the head there, John. Pacing.
Yeah.
Pacing was the problem. And the thing that I liked about the book is you were given a puzzle. And as you were reading, you were trying to figure out this puzzle, and then you'd be given the solution. So can I figure out this puzzle before I read the next two pages to figure out the solution?
Yeah.
And that's what attracted me to the book and made it a page turner. But in the movie, you didn't really get that. It was like,
No. Here's
the puzzle, here's the solution.
Yeah, right.
Here's
away.
The puzzle, here's the solution. But I do remember reading the book, and at some point, every new thing they came to was another puzzle, and I just threw up my arms. I'm like, when are they going to get to the fucking Holy Grail?
God damn it.
I'm sick of these goddamn puzzles. So pacing was an issue. And the other thing is when they pretty much stuck to the book as far as detail and tried to get all that detail in film. And that's what makes the movie so damn long and so narrative. And I think at some point you got to cut some of that stuff out. You got to say, well, what are the strong plot points? What are some of the weaker ones?
Yeah.
And let's trim the weaker ones. And Ron Howard is a director. Sure, he can put a movie together, but I think that he has trouble with action sequences.
Yeah, totally.
And with what else did I can't remember. I didn't bring my notebook, John. I should have brought my notebook. But pacing definitely was the thing.
Pacing.
And I started falling asleep towards the end. And the guy who did play Lee Teabing was the only interesting thing to watch. The other guy, the monk, was pretty interesting. Because you're wondering what kind of sick, demented mind would do this to themselves. But then you fall back and you think, well, what kind of dumbass would be in the church anyway? That's what I thought.
But it's funny because reading the book for me, the characters were totally different in the book than they were in the movie.
Totally different. What you had envisioned?
Yeah.
Well, the thing about the characters in the movie is the thing about Hanks and that chick from France, they were like asexual. There was no sexuality. You couldn't tell if they were hetero, homo, nothing. They were like plants.
And in the book, they were more...
flirty.
Flirty, yeah.
Like they were going to get it on.
Yeah, get it on.
But in the movie, there was none of that. Yeah. You couldn't even tell if Hanks liked Lee Teabing. You couldn't tell. You couldn't tell if which side of the fence he was on, John. And either with her. You couldn't tell. But you know why you couldn't tell with her, John? Spoiler, because she was a descendant of Jesus Christ.
Dude, man, what are you doing?
Well, come on. 50 million people read the book, right?
Right.
So who doesn't know?
Right. I mean, the book sold as many of the Bibles that were sold.
Sold the book, and the church is all up and... They got their panties in a bunch, and I couldn't figure out why for the life of me.
I think that wasn't there some statistic that said as many Bibles have been sold as the book?
Right. And Ebert made a mention of that, and he said the Da Vinci Code has a better ending.
Right.
but that's the, you know, I couldn't figure out why are they so upset about this. It's fiction, right?
Yeah.
And... It dawned on me today why the church is so upset about this. Here's why, John. I'm going to lay it out for you right now.
Lay it out.
This is Scott from Total Talk Nonsense laying out why the church is so upset about this. Because, here's why. Because if you're gullible enough to believe the fairy tale that is Christianity and Jesus Christ, then you're just gullible enough to believe that Jesus got married and had a kid. And you can't mix them up. You can be stupid on one hand, but you can't be stupid on this hand, the other hand.
Well, isn't it more believable that Jesus could have knocked up Mary Magdalene and the family blood lived on, as opposed to a guy walking on water? Because there's even a joke at the end of the movie where she puts her foot on the water.
She tries to walk across. Yeah. Well, and that's there's another struggle that I have with this whole Christianity is Jesus was God in flesh, right? So he could experience what it was like to be a man. And isn't being sexual like the number one priority of being a man? Isn't that more than half the experience?
Yeah.
Being a sexual being.
Well, I think it's part of your evolution. Part of evolution.
But how could Jesus not be a sexual being if he was man?
Right.
Even let's go out on a limb here, John, and say that he really was the Son of God.
You know, the Roman emperors even the Roman emperor. What was the Roman emperor in the movie?
Constantine.
No.
The guy who wrote the Bible.
No.
You the one that was around when Pontius Pilate put Jesus on the cross?
Way after. It was during, you remember in the Gladiator?
The Gladiator, yeah, Maximilian, Maximilus, Tiberius, Nero.
Yeah, what was the name of the emperor?
Augustus. I don't know. Should I run through all the emperors? Augustus.
Marcus Aquinas.
Marcus Aquinas.
I don't know. But anyways... He was, he couldn't believe how committed the Christians were in their celibacy. They would just like give up having sex and give up their money and their clothes and their belongings and all that and just take off. And he couldn't believe it. He was just like, this is unbelievable. You know, here we got our pagans, we're eating whatever we want. We got the vomitoriums, we're having orgies and all the shit. And it's like we cannot live without one second of that lifestyle. And here these Christians are very disciplined. They don't have sex. They don't do this unless they're married. And even then, it's only to have kids. And he was really impressed by that.
Yeah, so?
I'm just saying, you know, it's part of the history.
Of what?
Of Christianity.
Okay.
There was many, many sects, many followers of Christianity, and they were all Jewish. It wasn't until Constantine, actually after Constantine, I think there was another emperor some years after, that finally instated all the Catholic religious holidays and whatever you call it, like worshiping on Sunday, because the Christians used to do all the stuff that the Jews did. They worshiped on Saturday. Saturday was the Sabbath, not Sunday. Sunday was written in because of the pagans worshiped on Sunday because they worshiped the sun.
Okay.
On that day. So then they, yeah, what was I going to say?
I have no idea. I was talking about how could Jesus not be a sexual being, even if he was God's son, having flesh.
It's possible he couldn't.
The flesh of man.
It's possible that he could have abstained from sex altogether because of, you know, that was the thing.
That, okay, so what you're saying is that was the thing with Christians.
Yeah.
That they were the ones who came up with the sin.
He started it. He started
with the sex.
Yeah.
Not to have sex until you get married, yeah, and then only do it to produce kids.
I don't know. That could be just because of the Paul's letters.
Paul's?
Yeah, Paul, the Apostle Paul.
Paul the Apostle.
His letters to the Romans and the Corinthians and all that shit.
Or it could just be made up.
Yeah, could be. So I think it's more believable to think that Jesus knocked up Mary Magdalene and she, you know, they rushed her away and she popped out a kid and that bloodline lived on. Now, all the way to Sophie Nouveau, I don't know about that, but.
Well, and the thing about the scripture, and we're talking about historical scripture here, which we'll get to that later, but there's no accounting for Jesus from age 12 to 29. And in the time, back in the day, you already started your family before you were 29.
Well, there's no accounting in the New Testament, but there are other gospel accounts of Jesus before he was a rabbi or whatever he became. And I believe there's one possibly of Philip that says that he murdered someone.
All right, there you go.
When he was a teenager.
So
I'll have to pull that out.
John, I have the, I don't know if you're interested in hearing this, but the Da Vinci Code's top 10 errors. Would you like to hear the top 10 errors?
Sure.
And I don't know, this is by Robert Knight. I'm not sure from where he's from, but some Christian organization. And he starts out by saying serious Christians, John, not the non-serious Christians, will see through the many lies and historical fictions that Dan Brown plants throughout the best-selling book, The Da Vinci Code. Okay, so right here, he says many lies and historical fictions. Historical fictions, that's what I would say that the Bible is. It's historical
right.
fiction. But where does he get off calling The Da Vinci Code historical fiction? Where does he get off, John? it's opening November 19th. John and Scott have seen it. And he says Christians should avoid the movie and thus avoid rewarding Hollywood for blaspheming their Lord. But they should also be equipped with answers to the most dangerous misconceptions. Dan Brown is peddling one of the oldest known and easily discredited hearsays, John. Gnosticism. Did you hear that? Gnosticism.
Gnosticism.
And his claims are refuted by the rich history of, instead of the poor history, the rich history of Christian writing, beginning with the fairy tales themselves. Several books expose the many factual errors and ludicrous assertions in the Da Vinci Code. And the brief list of problems with Brown's book are here, are just the tip of the iceberg, John. Number one, the claim, Jesus was merely a man, not God. Brown says that the pagan Roman Emperor Constantine, for the purpose of consolidating his power, created the myth that Jesus was resurrected after crucifixion. Here's the fact, John. We're going to separate the shit from shinola. That was the claim. Here's the fact. Constantine, who converted to Christianity and ended Rome's persecution of Christians, conveyed the Council of Nicaea in 325, but only to sort out differences among church leaders, all of whom believed Jesus was divine. Early church historians referred routinely to Christ's divinity. Okay, so they're going to decide this 325 years after he was born. They're going to decide that, he was divine. Number two claim, John. The Council of Nicaea defined Jesus as God in a close vote. Constantine chose all the books for inclusion in the Bible as we know it. That is the shit, John. Here's the shinola. The Council of Nicaea, which took no notes, was conveyed by Constantine with Christian leaders across the empire mainly to dispense the theories of Arius. Father of Arianism. Is that like...
Arius. Irenaeus?
Yeah. Irenaeus. No, it's Arius. Father of Arianism. Arianism.
Arius. Spell it.
A-R-I-U-S. Arius.
Arius.
Who claimed that Jesus, while divine, was created, was a created being. Only two of the 318 clerics at the council did not sign the Nicene Creed. The early church had already adopted the four Gospels and most of the rest of the New Testament as authoritative long before the Council of Nicaea. Number three. Shit, John. The four New Testament Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, comprise a false account. Numerous ancient writings tell a more truthful story. Here's the shinola. Brown bases his view on 52 books collectively called the Gnostic Gospels, discovered in 1945 by Nag Hammad in Egypt. All were written more than a century after the biblical Gospels were written. None of these books has any ties to eyewitnesses in Christ's time, unlikely the Gospels themselves.
Nag Hammadi?
What did I say?
Nag Hammad.
Yeah. Nag Hammadi.
The, that's from the Gnostic Gospels. They were found in Nag Hammadi, yeah.
In 1945 in Egypt.
Right.
They were written a full century after the biblical Gospels.
Right.
Which were written a full three centuries after the Jesus Christ.
That's all. See, that once again, that's a bunch of fucking BS because... The writings of the Nag Hammadi Gospels were probably copied from other Gospels, just like the Gospels that were written for the New Testament, which were copied by a bunch of bishops from the Nicene Council.
And we talked about this earlier. Ideas, you can have revolutionary ideas that deviate from the evolutionary path of ideas. But in the instance of writing... These things were based on writings before and before and before.
Right.
Right, John. Number five, shit, John. Jesus did not die on the cross, but married Mary Magdalene and fathered children of her own. Brown claims the church was led by Mary Magdalene, whose role was covered up by a ruthless Catholic church. Here's the shinola, John. Jesus' crucifixion and reappearance after the resurrection are perhaps the best documented theological events in history. With literally hundreds of eyewitnesses, the Roman pagan historian Flavius Josephus recorded the event this way. He was the Christ, and when Pilate, at the suggestion of the principal among us, had condemned him to the cross, those that loved him at the first did not forsake him, for he appeared to them alive again the third day, as the divine prophets had foretold, these and 10,000 other wonderful things concerning him.
It's also been said that Eusebius might have doctored what Josephus, which is the only historian that's ever mentioned Christ. Eusebius has been quoted as saying that sometimes you have to lie to get your point across.
There you go.
So I think he possibly might have inserted, I think it was Eusebius, I'm not sure.
The nonsense about Jesus marrying Mary Magdalene and having children with her came from the plantard forgeries of the Gnostic Gospels of Philip and Mary Magdala. Now, how could they say they're forgeries? They just decide they're forgeries because they don't tote the status quo, John?
I don't know.
Number six, shit. Mary Magdalene is pictured in the Last Supper to the left of Jesus. Here's the shinola, John. If that figure is Mary Magdalene, then Leonardo inexplicably left out the Apostle John. The youngest disciple John was often portrayed in a feminine manner to convey youth, as is seen in the stained glass of European cathedrals. No credible art historian has asserted that John, the John figure in the Last Supper, is Mary Magdalene, nor is there any mention of Leonardo's journals.
Right.
Number seven, shit, John. The Catholic organization Opus Dei, the work of God, has an inner network of zealous members who would do anything to keep people from discovering the Christians' central claims are false. The Shinola, Opus Dei, which Brown correctly notes was founded in 1928, has no monks, although it does have numeraries of both sexes who pledge celibacy and live in single-sex centers. Yeah, right. There's a lot of jerking off going on there, John. Although Brown says on page 428 that Opus Dei and the Vatican were completely innocent of the immediate crimes in his book, the overall historical impression remains of the dangerously secretive cult-like group. Blah, blah, blah. Number eight, shit. The sacred feminine was at the heart of the early church, but was ruthlessly suppressed. It was man, not God, who created the concept of original sin, whereby Eve tasted the apple and caused the downfall of the human race. Women, once the sacred giver of life, now was the enemy. That's on page 238, John. Here's the Shinola. Once again, and throughout the book, John, Brown calls scripture a colossal lie. How dare he? Far from the oppressing women, the church has proved to be a liberating force. Women have achieved unprecedented status in nations where Christianity has had an impact. Jesus honored women among his followers. Mary Magdalene was the first to discover the empty tomb, see the resurrected Christ, and to tell the other believers.
Mm.
There you go.
Here I have a little something here. The first to cite this passage, the passage about Christ, is written by Josephus the historian. The passage of Antiquities was Eusebius, writing in about 324, who quotes the passage in essentially the same form. This is evidence that the passage existed in at least some manuscripts of the Antiquities of the Jews at that time, though many scholars believe that Eusebius himself might be the author of the passage.
Whoa.
So Whoa. He might have just popped it in there. You know, we don't have anything about Jesus here by this historian. Let's just throw this in here to make this authentic.
Right.
So we can, you know, it's kind of a Machiavellian way of doing things.
Which I would be all for, John. Number nine.
Hurry up. We're on 47 minutes.
Number
man.
Nine, shit claim. The Bible is ever-changing, living document. The Bible has evolved through countless transitions, additions, and revisions. History has never had a definitive version of the book, Brown writes on page 231. Here's the Shinola, John. No other book in antiquity has as many manuscripts that are consistently accurate. Even after 2,000 years. Yeah, that whole thing in Genesis where they contradict each other.
Right.
Contradict. Each other about who came first, the animals or Adam. In one gospel, it says Adam came first, and the other, it says the animals came first. Okay, so which is fact? I don't know. The New Testament, of which 5,000 early copies exist, also had the shortest gap time of authorship. Gap time between authorship, 55-95 A.D., and the earliest copies, around 200 A.D.
Still, it's way after he's dead.
It's 200 goddamn years after he died. Other ancient books have gaps of 1,000 years or more.
Anno Domini.
And all I have to say is look at some of the history books, the textbooks in high school that still exist today that tell the story of Christopher Columbus.
Right.
With a nice happy ending, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Not about his rampage and killing all the...
In his motives, his true motives, and what he was there for. He wasn't there to discover shit. He was there to get gold from India. All right. And we covered that in a previous podcast. And the last shit claim, John.
The last shit
Even
claim.
Walt Disney was a devotee of the Mary Magdalene cult. Once you open your eyes to Mary Magdalene as the Holy Grail, fictioner character Robert Langdon said... You see her everywhere. Langdon held up his Mickey Mouse watch and told her that Walt Disney had made it his quiet life's work to pass on the Grail story to future generations. That's on page 261, John.
Wow.
Here's the shinola. Mark Pinsky, author of The Gospel According to Disney, told the Culture and Family Institute, "I give it no credence whatsoever. The mention of Disney as a devotee of the Grail of the Da Vinci Code is the first that I'd read about it." And here's the conclusion, John. The Da Vinci Code is a clever and dangerous book, suffused with lies, distortions, and satanic imagery and historical inaccuracies.
Satanic imagery.
And historical inaccuracies, because when Noah brought every species ever existed on his ark, that was fact, John. These are historical inaccuracies, all designed to cast doubt in the reader's mind about the deity of Jesus Christ. Brown is trying to resurrect the old sex-based pagan fertility cults that Judaism and Christianity replaced while advancing civilization. By claiming that man, not God, inspired the Bible, Brown is appealing to the same pride that Satan did when he promised Eve in the book of Genesis.
What dumbass wrote this article?
That ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. The good news is that the truth will overcome the lies, because Jesus himself said, "And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free."
Right?
I didn't know Jesus sounded like Phil McCracken. That was by Robert Knight, John. The Da Vinci Code's top 10 errors.
Oh, man.
There you have it.
That's ridiculous. You know, some theologians and scholars believe that the whole Satan thing was brought about to describe Rome, the emperors, and the Jewish priests because of the corruption and all that stuff that was going on. They couldn't just come out and say, yeah, they couldn't just call them out by name because they'd all be beheaded. So they used words like demon and Satan and all that stuff. I don't think they ever used Satan in the good book until it was part of one of the revisions. But some scholars believe, theologians included, that they use those terms to describe their own priests within the Jewish religion and also the Romans.
Well, get this, John. Comic books do the same thing.
Elaine Pagels, I think.
To have a better superhero, you need a better supervillain, right?
Right.
So if you want Jesus to be better than he is already, let's create a Satan. Let's create a better supervillain so that Jesus can be a better superhero.
And no doubt, Jesus was this crazy, rebellious superhero. I mean, he went nuts. He didn't like the corruption. He didn't like the whole church thing, according to certain books. He didn't like the church collecting money from people. He didn't believe in organized religion. Even the Gospel of Thomas, one of the Nag Hammadi scrolls, states that he believed what Jesus was saying is God is within, more like Buddhism.
Right.
Heaven is within.
Now, a couple of closing thoughts, and I know we're way over time, John, here, but I got to get this in. Now, the Vatican and the church will come out against a movie, okay, and a fictional book.
Right.
But here's what they do with real life situations. Let me just read this little tidbit here. Pope Benedict the, whatever, 16th, has asked the elderly founder of the Conservative Order Legionnaires of Christ to stop celebrating public masses and live a life of prayer and penance, following a Vatican investigation into allegations he sexually abused Sumerians decades ago. Okay, so when they deal with real-life situations that one of their own people was sexually abusing Sumerians, they just say, you know what? Stop celebrating in public and live a life of prayer and penance, and we'll be okay. That'll
Scott,
be okay.
The devil made him do it.
Let's not send him to prison, and let's not make reparations to everybody he abused. Yeah, just prayer and penance, and don't go into public mass.
Oh, by the way, the Willows Academy?
Yes.
Right on the street over here?
Yes.
Opus Dei.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, big article in the Des Plaines Journal.
On Algonquin Times. And...
No, right here, right on Thacker.
Oh,
right on the Thacker. Corner. Thacker and Second.
Right.
Opus Dei.
Whoa.
Yeah.
We'll have to go and get an interview.
Yeah, no
doubt. And a closing thought, John. The female lead in Da Vinci Code. When I first saw her, I was like, yeah, she's all right, I guess, for a Frenchie. You know, because they don't shave their armpits and they smell. But the more the movie went on, the more attracted to her I became. And I think it was after the scene where she ran, they showed her running.
Yeah.
And her sweater kind of opened up and her blouse. Yeah. Yeah.
Then you could see her bajooms.
Right. And then the man in me took over, John, right?
Boing.
Ka-boing. And the other thing, we talked about this after we left the theater. Robert Langdon, for all the shit that he went through and figuring this out and that out, and basically, bottom line is just so that she could know that she's a descendant of Jesus Christ.
Right.
Because that's all that happened. That's it. They went through the whole movie so she could figure that out.
No, they were protecting her.
Yeah, the secret's still there because she's, what is she going
to
do?
Well, they wanted to remove the sarcophagus. They wanted to destroy that so there would be no evidence of that. And they wanted to kill her.
Right.
Because they said, what if there is this offspring?
Right, but she never went public, so they could still kill her.
No, but what's his name? The one Spanish priest believed that there might be one.
And he's dead.
Talking with the council. No, there was the council he was talking to. They were after these people. So actually, there could be a part two.
There could be, John.
There could be, because there were other people involved in that meeting, and the last person he talked to was that Einstein-haired-looking bishop.
Right.
Who said, yeah, what if there is an offspring?
Yeah, but how do they prove it? I mean, there's no Jesus DNA. So, how do they even prove it? Yeah, I'm Jesus' offspring. Okay, right.
Why can't they take the DNA from the Shroud of Turin?
I don't know, because why not?
Because it's
Shroud
of Turin is fake, and right. It was done by Da Vinci.
So, here's the point, John. If you believe in this whole fiction that is not only Christianity, but this movie layered on top of it, Robert Langdon risked his damn life for this woman and for this puzzle. And what does he get out of it? Nothing.
Nada.
If I'm Robert Langdon, I'm at least trying to get some head.
Well, I think he finally overcame his claustrophobia.
Oh, okay, great. So that's all I get. I get to overcome my claustrophobia. But wouldn't it be great, like, let's say I'm Robert Langdon, and let's say I have a podcast with my friend John, and it's the John and Robert Langdon Show, Total Talk Nonsense. If I go out on this adventure, which take place in a 24-hour period or whatever, I'm going to want to get head from the descendant of Jesus so that I can come in and say that I got head. From the descendant of Jesus. You know what I'm saying?
I would want to put... Wouldn't you want to put your demon seed in the descendant of Jesus?
In her mouth, not in her taco. Not in her pink taco.
Not in the pink taco. No. Not in her chalice.
No. I don't want to get involved
with
that.
Not in her grail, her
that
chalice.
That royal bloodline,
the
John.
The royal feminine.
No way. The holy grail.
All right, we got to go.
What are we at here? 60?
We're at 58.
Oh, nice. Nice. An extended part two. Talking about the Da Vinci Code.
And religion.
Right.
And it's great. We don't have anybody to debate. Special Ed was supposed to call me to see if he could come and be a guest again.
Well, he's a Bush apologist.
Yeah.
Is he a Christian?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I had this discussion about Easter and stuff with his wife. I wanted to know why she went to church. And she said, well, you know, because so the kids can learn. I go, how many times you go a year? Well, you know, on the holidays, I go, well, what's the point? Why don't you just grab a Bible and just read it at home instead of going to church? You really think that helps? And I think she got a little pissed at me. But then I emailed her the origins of Easter, and she couldn't believe it.
Couldn't believe
really?
It.
Really? But the Bible says different.
And I think that's what the church has all been out of shape about, is because if this movie piques their interest at all, to find out what the real facts are,
yeah,
they're going to see that the facts of the Bible are as loosely based as the facts of this fiction, of this novel.
Right.
And they're going to come to their own conclusions.
But here's the thing, what they don't understand, and I think this is what's crazy about it, is that if people really have some deep-seated faith, it's not going to matter what they read from Dan Brown or whatever. Even if they believe that, they still might be just the same as you, you being a deist and believing in a supreme being. And their spirituality will be untouched, unchallenged.
Right.
They don't need any fucking child molesting preacher to tell them that, no, this Dan Brown is evil, even though he never molested anyone. It's these guys who molest kids who and cover it up that you should be listening to.
Well,
I say fuck that.
Fucking A, John. And here's the hypocrisy, which you so eloquently pointed out. It's not about saving souls so that they can walk with God. It's about stripping you from 10% of your money so that I can keep preaching this stuff. That's right. What it's about. It's about money. It's about politics, and it's about power.
And the Vatican is a fucking city, man. It's a city within Rome. And the Pope drives around this fucking Pope-mobile that's worth bajillions of dollars with bulletproof glass and waving and all this stuff. He's eating three square meals a day. You know, he's supposed to be suffering.
Maybe four.
Four square meals a day. He's supposed to be suffering.
Why?
He's supposed to be sitting there going, poor, you know, acting like he's poor or whatever. He shouldn't be way up there waving to all the people. And while people are sitting there dying and they have nothing to eat.
That's not what I heard. I heard that the Pope is there because he's like one step below God. Like, if God is going to talk to anybody, it's not going to be Pat Robertson, it's going to be the Pope.
So the Pope has the only walkie-talkie or the cell phone number to God.
He's got, you know, like when you saw Batman and they had the red phone that blinked from Commissioner Gordon? That's what the Pope has.
Down the Pope poles.
Right.
I got to get in my costume. Pope man! Yeah, we got to go, man. We'll be right back.
No doubt.
All right.
That was part two. Now stay tuned for
part three. Part three.
Just one last quick way.
At Total Talk Nonsense with Sean and Scott.